Well, just over 3 weeks ago, Australia got a new arts minister. You'll remember that Simon Crean lost the job after that leadership spill in the Labor Party. Julia Gillard emerged triumphant. She sent Crean to the backbench and appointed Tony Burke as the new arts minister. Now, this switch has come at a crucial time. Just a month ago, Crean released the long-awaited cultural policy, which is called Creative Australia. It promised the arts communities big changes and big bucks. So what's going to happen to that policy now? With the federal election just 6 months away, what can the arts community expect from the new minister? Tony Burke joins me now. Minister, welcome to Books and Arts Daily.
Great to be with you, Michael.
Is it a portfolio you asked for? Were you surprised to get it?
Oh, it's a portfolio I begged for is probably a better way of describing it. When, after the 2010 election, I had actually hoped without asking that I'd get asked, because I did ask for everything else that was in the department with environment and water. But at that exact moment in time, arts was shifted off to another department. So while the circumstances of it becoming available were awful with the situation with Simon. Once it was there, I put my bid in very quickly to see if it was possible for me to take it on.
Because the arts community does get the impression often that the Ministry of the Arts just goes to, you know, somebody, and you can have the arts. But you really put your hand up. What's your commitment to the arts, Minister? Where's your interest lie?
Look, I'm one of those many Australians who approaches the arts community as a debtor. The engagement with the arts, while I've never regarded myself as having any particular talent with it, is something that has really, really shaped me right back from my teenage years. I've moved in and out of music in different ways, in and out of amateur theatre, and as a keen patron of live theatre for a long time. I've still got, which has captured the imagination of some, a discipline I've kept for more than 20 years now, of reading a poem out loud each day. So I just think very easily, particularly in politics, but it's true in many jobs, you can find yourself imprisoned within a world of non-fiction. And if you don't find those moments to make sure that the creative part of you is still being active, then everything suffers. Paul Keating always had that line where he reckoned his best policy work was done to Marla. And I think we can very easily let that go, and we shouldn't. We're poorer if we do.
Are you the sort of person who has learnt poems off by heart?
I know the question that follows up on
that. Yes, it does. Do you know one?
What I tend to do is I've got a heap of anthologies, and I will open a random page of one each day that I've never read before, and just take off on it. There's bits of Keats and various ones that I know relatively well.
Let's try some Keats, Minister. Now, here's the opportunity. Australia's listening. Here's Tony Burke, the Minister of the Arts, reciting Keats. Go
My
on.
My heart aches. You killed the
sorry,
dramatic
sorry,
pause
sorry,
at the beginning.
Sorry, it was a dramatic pause. I'm sorry, and I'm the arts guy. We'll do it again. I'll set you up again. Here's the Minister of the Arts, Tony Burke, with Keats.
My heart aches, and a drowsy numbness pains my sense, as though of hemlock I had drunk 1 minute past, or emptied some dull opiate to the brains. And there's something in between, and then we get to, 'tis not through envy of thy happy lot, but by being too happy in thine happiness. I think that's a beautiful line, absolutely beautiful line. And it's one where when you think about Keats lying in hospital as sick as he was and finding nature transporting him to somewhere better was one that I particularly love and have often referred back to since I became Environment Minister.
When did your affair with Keats start? Not your affair, but your interest in, your interest in Keats start.
There was a play by Ron Blair, an Australian play some years ago, called The Christian Brothers. Or The Christian Brother, I think it was called. And it was a one-person play, and the actor is playing a Christian brother in the classroom teaching, and the student is represented by the chair. And there's one scene in it where he's becoming furious with the student, and he is strapping the student and just belting the daylights out of the chair while reciting that line, but being too happy in thine happiness. And I was fascinated by, in that Australian play, by the difference between the anger of the classroom and the beauty and peace of the language. And I think from that moment on, I started reading, in particular, Ode to a Nightingale, but, you know, Grecian and a series of others. But Ode to a Nightingale, because it reflects back on that Australian play as well, has always been very close to me. And as I say, it just links in beautifully with where I think the environment can take people.
Well, Minister, we better talk about the politics of all this. So just over 4 weeks ago, Simon Crean, your predecessor, launched the cultural policy, Creative Australia. And generally, my impression is it was pretty well received by the arts communities. What are your plans for Creative Australia, bearing in mind that we were waiting a long time for a policy? It did appear to have stalled in the cabinet system, I guess. What's your vision for this?
I don't think we have time to try to relitigate anything that Simon put forward. There were some issues that Simon had already dealt with, and I've repeated as well, that needed to be corrected with respect to people with disabilities. And there's apologies that I've issued on that and that needed to be issued. But other than that, my view is that we just need to go straight to the stage of implementation and get on with it.
Well, you've got 6 months before the election. What do you aim to get done before the election?
I want to see the Australia Council reform go ahead. I want to be able to see the excellence pool start to work on some of the big ideas that are associated with it. And most importantly, and there was an article that went around the internet at the time of the cultural policy being launched by Jonathan Biggins. And in it, he said that the money's important and the structure's important, but one of the most important things with the cultural policy is the way we affect the debate and the discussion within Australia. And while that might, you know, sound a bit high level, I actually think it's a very important part of my job, which is to not hesitate to be leading a discussion about creativity and a discussion about not just why the arts is important for the arts' sake, but what the arts, how we actually can affect the, you know, the soul of the nation with the arts.
What does that mean, affect the soul of the nation?
Best example I can give that's tangible would be my eldest daughter's reaction to Secret River. At the end of it, she's 15, and at the end of it, I asked her, how did you feel? Was it too full on? And she said, oh, it was hard. It was really hard. But I'm so glad I saw it. I needed to know. And, you know, sometimes the arts has nothing to do with historical issues, and it still reflects beauty and creativity and how we feel and our emotions. Sometimes as well, there are Australian stories that can only be told through the arts in a way that really reaches people and makes them reflect on aspects of our history and to better understand how we get the future right. I think Secret River is a great example. I believe it's probably the best Australian play. And I went to it having not read the novel. I only finished the novel 2 days ago.
We should just explain that The Secret River is a stage adaptation of the Kate Grenville novel, which was terribly popular, The Secret River, and now it's been adapted to the stage.
Yeah, and I should add on that sitting next to my daughter on the other side of me when we saw the play was Kate Grenville, who made a lovely comment that she felt that the play sat beside the novel. It didn't summarise it. She described it as a cousin or companion to the novel. And that's why the reading the novel and seeing the play were different experiences, but I've been deeply affected by both.
Minister, in a way, Secret River is an easy one to understand why a government would support it, because it's a nationalist statement, and it goes back to the kind of nationalism in the arts that we saw, well, right back in the Whitlam government, I guess. But today, artists, many of them, are not so interested in making nationalist statements. Some of them are much more engaged with an international art scene, with an international urban art scene. How do you, as the minister, decide what the priority is when you're thinking about funding the arts? Is a nationalist statement front and centre for you?
No, and that's why when I I made the references earlier. I said that a lot of art, quite properly, is not, you know, historical reproductions or telling a story. Some of it just is a straight appeal to the emotions or other forms of challenge. So one of the things that I think was really good that Simon Crean put together in the cultural policy was for the Australia Council to have fewer funding silos to try to avoid a situation where creativity at any point was trying to match the funding model. Instead, if you broaden things and have things established in a much more general way, then the funding model can adapt to the creativity. And that's the way I think we best serve the great skills of artists in Australia.
The great danger of government funding of the arts is that governments will implement or try to enforce an ideological agenda. They will favour artists whom they see as sympathetic to their view of life. How do you avoid that danger?
The way it's been set up, I've got no choice but to avoid that danger. Pretty much all the funding goes through the Australia Council. So it's whereas with environmental funds, I'll get recommendations from the department and have long briefs on my desk with recommendations as to who should get the money. With arts funding, it tends to go straight through the Australia Council. And that allows an arm's length, which is quite appropriate. There are some countries that seek to turn the arts into a cheer squad, and I think everybody agrees that creativity is the poorer for it. Part of what happens with the arts in Australia, it will freely challenge society and challenge government, and we can't be afraid of that. We've got to welcome it.
Is arts an area where there's bipartisan policy, or are there clear differences between the two parties?
I think it's true to say that Labor has always, your two big statements on cultural policy, Creative Australia Now, and you have to go back to Creative Nation under the Keating government when Michael Lee was the minister to define the next big statement. So, and then your other reference you made was to the Whitlam government. I don't think there's any doubt about the level of passion that's come from my side of politics on this. It's also true, though, that I say that in a way that I believe we are best served when these issues can be bipartisan. At the moment, from what I've seen from comments from the opposition, they haven't come out either adopting or criticising the cultural policy. They've laid some blows on me, but if they want to hit me rather than the policy, I'm on for that. That's good. So I'm hopeful that we get to a point where it's bipartisan. They certainly haven't declared that yet. But if we get to that point, I think it's a better outcome for the country.
Well, Tony Burke, it's been terrific to have you on the program. Thank you for being my guest here this morning.
I've really enjoyed it. I'll come better prepared next time with the poetry, Michael.
Yes, you'll have to do your homework. Tony Burke is the new Minister for the Arts, and we'll watch with interest how he implements the Creative Australia cultural policy. This is Books and Arts Daily on RN. The Stella Prize is next.